available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Holy cow, Dave, we got a packed show today. So much to get to. So much news, so many reviews, so many games. We got an old favorite from last year.
You know how, like, when they talk about water levels, they're always talking about the snowpack?
Yeah.
We should talk about the show pack. the show pack is way above average levels right now.
Very, very highly above average levels. Happy Veterans Day to everyone out there. Thank you for your service, everyone. If you want to get a hold of us, you know, send us an email, anything like that. We got a bunch of questions to get to today. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is the email address, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast. The website is pac12podcast.com, reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions, and of course, our favorite, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating. We promise to read them. I don't know what happens, Dave, if we get 16 reviews in a week. Do we still have to read them?
There is no way out, but only through.
There's only through.
We must do.
I want to let everyone know we didn't have one last week, so I didn't have to give away 100. But I guess people got into it like, hey, we want to get the $100 gift card to Jockey. Thanks again to Jockey. I got some more Jockey news coming a little bit later on, but we'll pick the best one. So let's go.
All right. We'll start with the Syphilitic Emperor. Now, I will make a note up front. iTunes has once again, and I will continue to call it iTunes, they changed the way you can view reviews. You have to open up like the iTunes app on your friggin' computer to actually read reviews. So I'm having to look at this on my phone, which means I can't actually read the entire subject line. So the podcast to which all others ... I'm assuming Aspire. That's what I'll guess.
Okay.
This is from Syphilitic Emperor, which is a great username. No hilarious troll reviews or sarcasm, and I don't need the gift card. I just wanted to share that I got accepted into USC and have been in a state of happiness since getting the news. Dream school. I grew up with this podcast, and in a strange way, it helped motivate me, Ryan in particular, to chase my dreams. I had awful grades in high school, but spent the last 2 years hustling at best I could at the JC level. 3.96 GPA, and I start in January. Fight on. Awesome.
That, I mean, very cool.
Also, grew up with our show.
That's weird. Me inspiring you, that's also weird.
That's also weird. Like, there is no level at which you should have been inspired by anything from this show to earn a 3.96 GPA.
But congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. Weird. That's very, very exciting.
No sarcasm here. That's
none
awesome.
None whatsoever. Yeah. That's awesome. All right, this is from 503. 5 stars, I guess. A podcast about Pac-12 football, kinda. We're the only team that's nationally relevant, only lost once but has beat another top five team, won the last two conference championships, and will be favored in every game from here on out. Most likely can't even reach the number one spot in the conference power rankings. That logic about sums up this podcast. So when Wazoo or Utah or whoever you put ahead of Oregon this week loses, rank Oregon one next week at least, or at least send me a Jockey card for warning you.
We have Oregon one. They're the only team in the last, like...
But remember, this was sent on November 2nd.
Okay. 6 weeks. They're the first team to win as our POC number one seed.
That's true. It's true. All right. This is from yet another Duck fan. 5 stars for a top five podcast. Is this a top five podcast across the genres? Definitely not. Is this a top five podcast in sports? Not even close. Is this a top five college football podcast? Nope, but we're nearing double digits now. Is this a top five Pac-12 centric show? Sure, but I can only name three of them. One run by students who have memorialized Bill Walton in their name, one with data and betting nerds, and this dreck. So I guess top five is true, if only by a technicality, which is definitely enough for Ryan and Dave. Is it worth listening to? Here's my best comparison for what this show is. Just think of it as the 2 hours on hold with your local branch of the library to only find out that they don't have any books on football, but they'd like to know if you are interested in Civil War generals or obscure historical references instead. It's not what you came for, and you're not really sure you're interested, but you've invested this much time. A true tale of the sunk cost fallacy. Go Ducks, and definitely use your finite time on Earth to listen to this train wreck. You may not know more about football, but you can claim to be academically prowess afterwards. That's a contender. Right,
that has to. That could be the winner.
That's probably the winner, but we'll keep going. Supamex, the classic. This is a podcast. Yes, this is a podcast. I like it because you know what they were trying to do? They were trying to sneak in there with no other reviews and see if they could win with no
effort. That would have been a fun way to win.
That's a David Woods type review, right? I'm just trying to win this stupid thing with the least effort possible.
Right.
All right. This is from Lane 987545785743646FA. No one else is listening. I'm not only writing this review because I want the gift card, but I'm certain that I'm going to win since I'm the only one still listening because everyone else listened to your terrible picks and have lost all their money on my bookie and cannot afford these bills for internet. I'm also going to put the same effort into my punctuation as you guys do into your picks and analysis and not put any in any punctuation. In conclusion, please put more effort into your picks so people can stop going broke because we do not need more homeless people on the streets of Eugene. We are going to start to smell as bad as it does in Corvallis. Not a period in there.
Wow.
This is from Ocknus 16. It's a podcast. Sometimes they even talk football. This is from Bonton is Good, 5-star review. It's a podcast commensurate in quality with the conference it covers. This is from Jeff Wu, USC 1994. This is actually he really went lazy. He's just publishing the same review twice. I'm not even going to read that one, Jeff. This is from Duke Dougal. Just married. Hey, guys, I just got married last weekend. My new wife, horrified, says I need to get new underwear. Please save me from an early divorce with some sweet jockey gear. P.S. The podcast is okay, too, I guess. P.S.S. Go Bruins. Congratulations on the marriage. This is from Gary in Germany. Sun Devil in Tucson. Ooh. Couple of West Coast honks whose consistently 2+ hour pods would make Larry Scott blush. From the Palouse to the Sonoran Desert, nobody does it better. Nate Dogg reference. All right.
I like it.
This is 5 stars like Jimmy Lake from Eric24601. This pod doesn't compete with other Pac-12 pods, only pods that have podcast prowess. Analysis of the Conference of Champions is as on point as Jimmy Lake with the game on the line or John Donovan scripting an offense. 5 stars. RIP John Donovan. See you on the flip side.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a bit.
This is from RS0161847, UPS truck driver. Sorry I'm not witty or creative. If I was, I'd probably be doing something else for a living. But I do look forward to the podcast. It keeps me entertained for a couple hours a week. Keep up the good work and go Utes. Love it.
Awesome.
This is from Becton9965. Ryan and Dude, if you have read my email, you'll see I promised to leave a 5-star rating. Promises made, promises kept. On a separate note, I left all my underwear in Arizona over the weekend, and I'm really just hoping for a gift card. I hope I'm not being too subtle. This is from MV Halos, here to support West Coast football. Since my phone doesn't have Apple Podcasts and I usually listen on Stitcher, I borrowed my wife's phone to leave you guys 5 stars. Lately, I found myself listening to Feinbaum for college football talk because local radio in SoCal barely discusses it. There are only so many times you can listen to Bo in Mississippi call and talk trash on Dusty in Arkansas. So here I am to support the Pac-12. I'll make sure to not only watch my team, but to support the conference as a whole by watching other Pac-12 games. Now, if we can only keep the talent out west and get more support from the schools to hire great coaching staffs. All right, we got 2 more. Ready?
Okay.
This is from a horse with no ute. When it rains, I thought this review was going to be something between USC and Arizona, but it changed to a Cal or Washington State after last week. Being a Ute fan, listening to this drivel that you two espouse is like drinking the water that finally makes it to the ocean at the end of the LA River, polluted and defiled. The problem is that you're just reporting on the Pac-12, so you get a pass. Last week, you decided to share in some adult beverages, and some funny actually came out. I was as surprised as you were clueless. Ryan's comment that Arizona might win a game sometime in the next 2 years got a LOL on my drive, so I suggest using the adult beverage to lubricate the more comedic side, because God knows that's the only thing that might keep me listening. I know the number one pick curse is broken, but please don't slide Utah in, even though we all know they are the better team. Use the booze. Go Utes.
Nice.
And this is from Listen McListener, a podcast worth its weight in gift cards. Number 3 reason, I will pay Ryan the 58 cents for postage if I win. And like David, I'm a fan of line breaks. Also, still a good podcast. 3 reviews equals 1 gift card. Sure hope so. Keep up the great work, guys. Listen McListener.
Nice. You know,
yet another Duck fan is the winner.
Yeah. Yeah. Obvious. That was so good. So yet another Duck fan. Email us. Email me, ryan@uscfootball.com. I will send you the gift card. Thanks to Jockey for providing those $100. You get some underwear, some gear. I think so I tried to pull up, you know, iTunes or whatever on my computer and I can't do it anymore. Did something change?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
So I feel like that's like maybe why we didn't get reviews last week. Like there was some weird stuff going on.
Maybe it was a glitch in the matrix.
So there's some kind of matrix glitch or whatever. But thank you for all the reviews, and the Duck fan will get the gift card. So thanks for that. Also want to thank MyBookie, being a great sponsor. So more is always better. That's why MyBookie instantly doubles all your first-time deposits. With double the funds, you can double the action, and more importantly, double your wins. I did that this past week, David. It was great. Getting in the action has never been easier. Use promo code PAC12 to get started. The best part is you can bet with your favorite currencies. You can do crypto. With all that little extra scratch, why not get in on the biggest matchups of the week at MyBookie? Of course, you got the Pac-12. You can bet on any college football, but we're inching closer to the NFL playoffs. Showdown between divisional rivals San Francisco 49ers and the Rams. And the Rams just picked up OBJ as we're writing this, so that's kind of cool. So check it out. You can bet all that stuff over at MyBookie, and you get the double deposit bonus, like I said. And I did it this past week, David. As I said, you know what? I've been doing one unit per game. So one unit every Pac-12 game. Week one, I won, went 5-1, was great. Week two was 2-4, but we also had that free bet that I got. So I got a winning week from that. This past week, you went 4-1. I went 3-2. We had the USC game kind of the tipping point. So I had five bets down, five units. I put five more units just on the Oregon game alone. The one that you were saying, no way, they're the number one team in the power. I bet as much as I bet on all the other games on Oregon again. And that was a winner. So I've more than doubled my money in my bookie account in 3 weeks. I am pretty happy about it.
You got to be stoked.
I was pretty happy.
Got to be stoked.
And it's nice to pick games right too. But yeah. And picking the right one. I just, as soon as Lake tweeted that, you know, the academic prowess thing.
Academically prowess program.
Yes, because they were an academically prowess program. I tweeted out, like, give me Oregon -6, instantly. And I put my money where my mouth is, and now I've had a good week on there, so it was good. We'll get to all that, but thanks to MyBookie. Make sure you check it out, mybookie.com, mybookie.ag, but also use promo code PAC12. And we also have a survivor pool winner. Two winners. Yeah. Who are the winners? Do you have it up? Do you have it pulled up?
No, God, no.
I can do that.
I just remember things that I read.
So the winner.
It's Sinjin.
Sinjin and Dustin.
And Dustin.
Yeah. So Matthew wrote in and says, Sinjin and Dustin have tied for the Survival Pool Championship by both being knocked out of week 10. So Dustin was victimized by Berkeley ravaged Cal. So he had Cal, unfortunately, and had all the COVID stuff. Sinjin was a victim of Oregon's revival of Colorado's offense the previous week. So neither of them were bold enough to pick Arizona in their moment of glory. I guess they could have picked Arizona. While they were also not courageous and or stupid enough to go out in a blaze of glory with Stanford, who lost against possibly the best quarterback tailback combo in the conference. I'm referring, of course, Jack West and Isaiah Sanders. So congrats again from Matthew. And I sent this over to our buddy Tom at Jockey. I'm like, what can we do for these guys? We got two winners. I just got in the mail before I came over here. Each of them are going to get $200 in gift cards to
Boom.
Jockey. Each one. So that's $400 in gift cards for the survival pool. That's like a legit prize.
That's really
that we even
legit.
Know. That's really, like legit.
Really legit.
So Sinjin, Dustin, I think we have your emails, but I'll email you guys and let you know about that. So yeah, so very cool. Congratulations. And they both get $200 in Jockey gift cards for doing our survival pool.
Fan friggin' tastic.
Matthew, thank you for running that all season. You were amazing. So great. Great job there.
Wonderful.
Okay. Newsy stuff. I guess we got some. I couldn't find the drop. You want to do it?
COVID canceled.
Yeah. I'm driving to practice on Tuesday, and I get a text from Keeley and a text from Chris Trevino. We're on like a group text, and both of them say game canceled. And basketball season was starting. I'm not a basketball person. Shaka was going to go to the game. I assume they're talking like the basketball game was canceled. I wasn't even thinking that the football game was canceled.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the football game was postponed.
Cal's had a massive, I won't call it, I guess, an outbreak, whatever. They've had a lot of positive tests on their team. It derailed them, as we'll talk about, in the desert.
Yeah.
And now it has canceled the game. It sounds like it was one position group that just got completely annihilated, essentially. They actually had fewer positive tests this week than the previous week, but one position group was completely done and they couldn't play. So it's been rescheduled, USC Cal, for December 4th.
Yeah, so they rescheduled it. We don't know the TV. It's the day after the Pac-12 championship game.
Hey, but it's the eighth place championship game.
So neither
eighth place game.
Both teams can barely be bowl eligible. They're not going to win their division. So it's very interesting. And like early on, it just seemed like there was fight. You know, Chase Garbers came out and like was critical towards the city of Berkeley and the well, the health. What is it? It was like, I forget, the Berkeley, like the University Health Department or whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of fingers being pointed.
Players were really mad. The city came out firing. And like you were saying, like they're like, this is an outbreak. Initially we thought there was like a couple people tested positive. They're asymptomatic. Contact tracing wiped out the team. That wasn't the case. There was 44 cases of like positive tests, like lab confirmed positive tests, not false positive or whatever. Is it like really an outbreak? Like, I don't think anyone's sick. There's no one's like, you know.
Yeah, they might not be. I mean, they're like 99% vaccinated, but still.
But they have the virus. So I get like, so I'm just not one like that would be sympathetic.
They should be punished just from like a stupidity standpoint. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah, like to be that vaccinated and then to have that many positive cases. Like, I was like, you know, on Twitter, like people were kind of crushing the city as like, maybe, I don't think it's that. I mean, there's probably a little bit of everything. Like, if this was Alabama, I don't think they would have canceled the game. Like, they probably wouldn't have been tested. Yeah, yeah. No, they wouldn't have been tested and all that stuff.
I haven't heard of any number. Like, and I know some schools are still reporting the numbers, and I haven't heard anything like that number of positive tests.
No. Something's amiss.
Something's weird at Cal. Like, it's not just the city of Berkeley being weird with their requirements. Something bad happened with the football program and or the university.
Yeah. There's something weird going on. And
yeah. Are they doing surveillance testing properly? Like, what are they doing that allowed that level? Because that's... I mean, that's a full, like, even counting walk-ons and personnel and everything, that's a full third of the, like, entire program that was positive.
There's coaches. There's a lot of people.
That's crazy.
This is – so, unfortunate situation. And I felt – I had a lot of sympathy for the players. I wasn't blaming them at all. There might be some
there might be some blame to go around.
I might have been just throwing, you know, darts at the city just because it was like, what are those hippies doing over there? But it seems like they were probably okay, you know? But whatever. The good thing is, like, there was options.
The good thing is that we don't have to watch Cal football this weekend. or and importantly, USC football.
For all those people that were making jokes on Twitter about like why we were delayed, it wasn't me, but we won't get into that. But I don't have to work this weekend now. I'm going to play at a volleyball tournament. Like, I might, you know.
You're going to get drunk and watch games.
I'm going to be, like, I might not be watching games. I might be on my phone or whatever. But so what could happen? People are asking on Twitter and stuff, like, isn't it a forfeit? So this year versus last year, where we say COVID canceled, if it was COVID canceled, there should have been a forfeit. But there's options there, and the schools could come together. There's an open date, obviously, the championship weekend. They talked to Pac-12 commissioner George Kliavkov. They would like to play the game. They're going to play the game. For Cal, they're 3-6. They need to win out to make a bowl. USC's 4-5. They got to win 2 of 3 to make a bowl. USC could have said, you know, we're out. We're going to take the forfeit. And they're going to play. So that's good. I think it's better for the players and everyone they get a chance to play.
It's better for the money.
It's better for the money. But the forfeit, you know, would have helped them. Now they got to try to win 2 of their last 3 with UCLA, BYU, and then Cal.
Murderer's row.
Unfortunately for Cal, like we've seen teams be dead and then like come back. You know, you get the gif of the Undertaker come back to life.
That's the screwed up part for Cal is if they had been healthy last weekend, they probably do beat Arizona, even with Arizona. Well, we'll talk about that. But they probably could have made a real run at bowl eligibility. And now they can't.
It would have been tough because they would have won that game. They would have won 3. It would have been 3 in a row, right? Like, they looked like a legit. They were.
And then they would have still had Stanford and UCLA on the schedule, both winnable games, not to mention USC.
Yeah. So they would have. They played Oregon tough and then started winning, you know? So they've turned it around. But this COVID stuff just derailed them. And so I don't know if they'll be able. It looks like big game is going to be on from what they're saying. It sounds like people are going to be okay by then, and they'll be able to be out of protocol and all that stuff. So you didn't correct me saying the big game. Okay. So that's good for Cal going forward. But can they built up that momentum. Are they just going to go back to being crappy Cal that was 1-5 at the beginning of the season, or are they going to be, like, good? So I don't know. We'll see.
Right.
Okay, so there was that. There's also some news at the University of Washington. Oh, man, Washington's a bad football team, Dave.
So bad.
They're not good.
So bad. So bad. Okay. All right. I want to take the lead on this.
Go ahead.
They fired John Donovan after the game. Should have fired himself, Jimmy Lake. Jimmy Lake should have been fired immediately. Immediately. So they're using a pretext for suspending him for, I don't know, slapping a guy on a helmet and then pushing him from behind. Like, okay, so I'm not pro coaches like beating on players at all. Like, I think it's always stupid and
messed
up.
Way to take a stand.
Yeah, totally. But that's not the reason you're getting suspended. The reason you're getting suspended, Jimmy Lake, is because you chose to punt with 2 minutes to go down by 8 in a game where, like, Oregon was, like, suddenly just driving on you all the time.
Running the ball.
You decided to surrender in a one-score game where your true only option for actually, like, winning that game in a non-fluke circumstance was to convert your 4th and 10 from your own 10. That was your only chance.
Yeah.
And you decided to punt. And then you know what your long snapper dude did out of, like, subconscious protest? He snapped it out of the goddamn end zone because you are a coward and you should be fired for that. And you probably will be. I mean, you're getting suspended now. So Jimmy Lake was suspended for basically slapping a player's helmet and then pushing him from behind, which was a bad look. It looks awful.
And punting.
But it was really for the fact that he sucks as a coach. And he should never coach another game at Washington, and I don't think he will. I think it'll be this week he's suspended, and then next week the lawyers will have had enough time to work out a buyout, and he'll be fired.
Well, yeah. Well, Donovan's fired. So I assume Washington's offense is going to go bananas because Colorado fired their offensive line coach, and their offense got like 100% better or more.
Look,
you fire the offensive coordinator, like, you're just going to go through the roof. Like,
I think Washington will be better. They will be. John Donovan was horrible. And they do have talent on that offense, but their offensive line is a mess, and I don't know if that gets fixed by a coordinator decision. But, yeah, Washington, Jesus Christ. Jimmy Lake, I've never been more infuriated by a decision in a game where I had absolutely no rooting interest whatsoever. I was so furious.
Because you didn't pick Oregon. You picked Washington.
I picked Washington, but I didn't really from a pure like decision making standpoint. And like people are like making the case, oh well, it was only a difference of like 0.2 in win expectancy at that point.
Really?
And I'm like, well, you want to know why? Because no matter what they did, they had like a 1.5% chance of winning the frigging game. Do you know what a 0.2% chance difference is when there's only 1.5% chance that you win?
It's like a
5% decision at the beginning of a game.
Yeah.
Like, decisions are magnified at the end of the game. That's why you can't screw up the end of a game in a one-score game. And you screwed it up magnificently. You should be fired.
Thinking
immediately.
About it, though, I think punting was probably the better call.
Like, I will come over there and I will strangle you. Anyway, Jimmy Lake, you should be fired. John Donovan,
John Donovan is properly fired. Jimmy Lake is suspended. Jen Cohn, the athletic director, came out and, you know, said some stuff. They said we're going to review it. They did. 24 hours later, he got suspended.
So. Yeah, and they're currently reviewing his contract and they're going to fire him.
Oregon State, man, Oregon State's 1-4 on the road. Did you know that?
Right, and their defense is trash on the road.
The team that they beat on the road, USC. Smacked them around.
Beat the hell out of them.
So that doesn't really count. Tim Tibisaar.
Defensive coordinator.
Yeah. He gone.
He gone.
Silly season going on.
Oh, yeah.
Because
this is the situation where firing a coordinator is acceptable and a good proper sized reaction to a specific problem. Like, Oregon State, you don't need to fire your head coach. You did need to make a change at defensive coordinator, and it's good that you did it right now. That's great.
It was a good time. I mean, when you give up a whole bunch of points to Cal and Colorado, teams that weren't like good at putting up a whole bunch of points, then you're like, ooh, that's a problem.
Yeah, this was good.
All right, so Tibisaar, he gone, and we'll see what Oregon State's able to do. I think they come back home this weekend, so we'll talk about all that. Your buddy Jim Mora got hired at the head coach of UConn.
Timothy Mora, UConn head coach. I think he's probably going to get the band back together because Lou Spanos, his defensive coordinator from his first 2 years at UCLA, was the interim head coach at UConn.
Oh, so he'll probably stay on.
Noel Mazzoni was brought in as an offensive consultant a few weeks ago.
Wow.
So he could have his entire staff.
They were planning this.
Yeah, they might have been. I don't think it's a good fit for Jim, but we'll see. I mean, he might, you know, if he brings some energy to it, he might be able to do something, but he needs to be able to recruit, and I just don't know if you can recruit UConn.
Yeah. Hey, and all the other, like, I know we're LA-based and all that stuff, and you want to, like, get on us for talking USC or UCLA. Have your former coaches go out and get hired at some weird spot. You know, have Clay Helton go to Georgia Southern. Have Jim Mora go to UConn. If your former coaches did that, we'd talk about that too.
Right. We need that.
You got to be weirder.
Yeah. You're not doing enough weird shit.
Yeah. Okay. Kyle Whittingham, I get it. You've been there for 20 years. Who cares?
Right.
Go do something dumb.
Oh, Mike McIntyre, you want to go be an offensive analyst for like whatever, Texas or Alabama, wherever the hell you went? Fine. But that's not interesting. They already have like 15 head coaches on their offensive staff.
Go be the head coach at UConn. Yeah. Then we'll talk about you.
Yeah.
All right.
Go take a high school job, you assholes.
All right. Rankings real quick. Oregon moves up a spot. Michigan State loses. Falls behind Michigan, which you probably don't care, but like a lot of people were talking about that. Like Michigan State beat Michigan, and now they're behind them in the rankings. But Oregon's number 3, and Utah snuck in. They're number 24. So that's good. So we have two teams in the Pac-12 ranked in the college football rankings.
That's great.
You care. The AP poll... Oregon's number 5.
Why?
Compared to what?
Why are we talking about the AP poll?
I don't know. Just mention it. It's a note I have.
This is a Micah note right here.
No, this is my note.
This is a Micah note. It's a Micah level note.
Utah received 32 votes. They're not ranked.
The AP poll is so irrelevant once you get to the CFP rankings.
True. It's very dumb. BYU's 14, though.
I'm just going to go ahead and delete this for you.
Go ahead, delete it. It's fine. All right. I think that's all the newsy stuff that I had.
Good. We're only like 40 minutes into the show.
And we're going to do a
Pac-12 roundup.
So we've changed our rankings a little bit, and we'll recap the games from last week. Like I said, Dave went 4-1. I went 3-2. We both had a pretty good week in the picks against the spread. Dave's getting closer to 500. I'm still a ways, but I'm making money, which I'm happy about. My bookie has been helping me with that. So I'm so much more happy about my picks because... Yeah, doubling down on that Oregon game was so glorious. Okay, let's get into our picks. We have a new team at the bottom, a new team at number 12.
Stanford Cardinal.
Yes, they were, playing at home. I thought they probably played pretty well, I would assume, playing against
Utah Utes.
Truly terrible. Stanford looked awful. And so we did everyone a service last week on the podcast, and I think some people made some money because we brought it up pretty early, because nobody reads, no offense to anybody reading from maybe a Stanford news site, nobody reads the articles that like Stanford beat reporters are writing about Stanford because there aren't any Stanford fans.
Yeah.
But we occasionally do that service for you, and we informed everyone that Tanner McKee was more than likely out for this game, which meant it was going to be the Jack West experience, which meant no matter what the spread was going to be, you got to bet Utah. And so I had people, I mentioned just before the start of the game, oh, you can still get Utah like plus whatever it was, 10 or something, or minus 10.
It was seven and a half when we did it.
Right. You can still get Utah minus 10. And it was like Jack West is starting the football game. And somebody messaged me and was like, oh, I got in at like Utah minus 13. Thanks for letting me know. Because it was obvious what was going to happen. Utah won 52-7. Like, and it was... So if
was it that close?
No, God no. So Stanford was able to do absolutely nothing offensively. Jack West was, Jack West. They tried a little bit of wildcatty type stuff. They tried some stuff with Isaiah Sanders. It was just not good. They couldn't get anything done offensively. And then on other end, honestly, Utah probably could have hung 60 on them if they had just committed to running the ball entirely, like had never thrown the ball at all with Cameron Rising. He was not very effective throwing the ball. They ran, though, for 441 yards on 46 carries. They averaged almost 10 yards a carry. And usually when you see that, it's like, oh, they went for like 200 yards and it was just like a really explosive game. No, they murdered them. 46 carries
for almost
10 yards a carry is insane. And they could have done even worse. Like it could have been really, really, really bad. It felt like every time they were popping a big run, Utah just completely demolished them, completely annihilated, didn't need to throw the ball at all. I need to start looking into what Utah returns next year because they're kind of evolving into a little bit of a juggernaut in some ways this season, and they get a lot back, I know. I just need to know if it's everything, like if they're returning most of their offensive line. Because as it stands right now, I mean, Utah, they should go into next year as one of the major favorites in the conference and probably something to be a national contender.
Yeah, and I didn't mention it, but they are number two in our power rankings. We didn't bump them up to one. There was talk because they look so good, but Stanford's so bad. Tanner McKee, obviously super important to this team.
The MVP. The MVP.
Mean, he's our Chase Garbers of a couple years ago. Wow, did they look bad. This is the Friday game. I was in Tempe, Arizona. Well, I was in Scottsdale and watching a bar in Scottsdale with some buddies and really involved in this one. Every time Utah was scoring, I was just like going crazy. And they're like, well, I'm like, oh, this is my first bet of the week. I want to like start off on a good note. You know, the previous week, it didn't start off that way. And I was just like, this is awesome. Like, oh my God, it's getting worse. It's like, they're dead. They're dead. Stop it. They're dead. You know, it was like,
yep.
And
oh yeah,
it just got worse and worse and worse. And it's just all those times. And we got an email from my Peristyle podcast earlier. Someone just sent in an email that all it said was Stanford is butt. And it was a graphic of like the scores and they just circled the 52-7 score. So that's all I got. And I was like, yeah, I feel a little, I feel like kind of justified, right? Like I feel like.
Yeah. Stanford's butt.
Their butt.
Yeah. And they're going to finish with a real butt ass record.
It's probably going to be 4-8 or 3-9.
You're not going to have to sing a song at the end of the year.
Yeah.
That's where we are.
Where are we? Where's our Zodiac killer? Like, we haven't heard from him.
He'll jump in, I'm sure.
If Stanford gets some miracle win or something. But holy cow, they were bad.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we both got that one right. I didn't, that would have been a good one to double up on, too. I could have put more money on that one. But I wanted to do it with the Oregon game. So ended up working out. Okay. All right. This one, absolutely crazy. Our number 11 team, they're moving up.
Arizona Wildcats.
Dang. They were hosting our now number 8 team.
California Golden Bears.
This was a magnificently awful football game for so long. So it was a scoreless game at halftime. So
like
Cal,
soccer.
So Cal came into this one, obviously decimated by COVID. Ryan Glover was starting. He's like a Ivy League transfer because Chase Garbers was out. And Arizona was Arizona, you know, just what Arizona is. And like I'm going to steal this from the Solid Verbal because it's important to do the drive chart for the first half.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah.
Punt, interception, punt, 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 interception, punt, 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 end of half. Like, it was so many three and outs. Like, it wasn't even like they were, like, moving it a little bit and then had to punt or whatever.
Punt from the 50
there
or
were
something.
So many drives and so many three and outs. I think it was, like, the third quarter when one of the teams, I forget who, actually converted a third down for the first time. Might have been Cal. Yeah. Cal was, on third and fourth down, Cal was 1 of 15.
Oh my God. Like how do you watch that?
Because the thing was like end of the day, Arizona dominated this game and should have won bigger. They had like two bad plays go against them in the first half, which was two picks. But otherwise, like they really did handle this game. They were the only team able to move the ball with any consistency. They were just making mistakes. But it was such a like amazingly bad football game until the scoring finally happened in the third and fourth quarter. Arizona won. Can't take a ton away from it, except that I think their offensive production truly has gotten better. I think Will Plummer is playing with more confidence. The two picks were bad, but he also ran the ball pretty well. Like he was he was Arizona's leading rusher with 68 yards. Stevie Rocker played a lot more in this one, which was good to see. He wasn't very productive, but I like him. And it was mainly just Cal couldn't do anything. I mean, Ryan Glover was ineffective at quarterback. They couldn't run the ball at all, and Arizona's defense played really well. But overall, Arizona got its first win in, 20 games?
Yeah, 20 games, 2 years, and like a month or whatever since they won a game last. Will Plummer is essentially John McClane. Like, he's like the dude in Die Hard. Like, he's just getting his ass beat. He's bloody.
I don't know if he has a right hand anymore.
And, you know, jumping out a window with a fire hose tied to his waist, like breaking, shooting the glass, whatever he was doing, unbelievable. Like, just the tough man of the year award. There's like teammates like tweeting about how tough he was. things had to come together. I don't know if Arizona falls apart. I don't know if Arizona builds on this. Whatever happens, but they needed something.
They needed
some kind
a win.
Of
they desperately needed
They
a
should
win.
Have beat Washington. They didn't beat Washington. Like, here now, they get the win. Yes, Cal was decimated by COVID. Without the COVID, I don't think Arizona wins. Like, Chase Garber, we say Tanner McKee is the MVP. Like, obviously, Garber's like, if Garber's isn't in there, Cal is just,
look, Cal,
it melts. It's like,
Arizona may still have been able to take away the running game. Like, they might have been, because they were clearly geared to do that. But with Garber's in there, he probably runs the ball, and he probably throws the ball a lot more effectively than Glover. And Cal scores, whatever, 10 more points, 13 more points.
Yeah. So, it just, you got to be happy, though. Any problem them rushing the field? You cool with that? Or
oh, rush the damn field. No, rush it every time. Every time you win, wins are precious, baby, especially in Tucson. Rush it every time you win.
So congrats to Arizona and Cal. Like we mentioned, they're going to miss a game, but hopefully they'll be able to regroup, get the big game. I said the big game. Big game, and then Notre Dame, and then USC. So I'm sorry. That was Stanford is going to play Notre Dame.
Jeez.
Yeah. UCLA and USC for there Cal. Okay. Our number 10 team is
Colorado Buffalo.
And they were hosting our now number 5 team. I don't know why I have them up there, but there's nowhere else to put them.
Oregon State Beavers.
We might have to start calling them Suddenly Competent Colorado.
Yeah.
Because they're no longer in the bottom tier of this league, I think. So if you've been watching closely to Colorado, if you've been, you know, paying attention the last 2 weeks, Colorado's kind of fixed some things offensively. And by some things, I do mean the 5 guys up front who play on the offensive line, and I do mean just by firing one assistant coach. This is one of the most absurd developments I've ever seen, because I've always been of the belief that position coaches, like in season especially, they don't really, like, they're not really that important. Like, they're not really doing that much. They're not, like, doing a bunch of development in season, or, like, they're not having that big of an impact outside of whatever the coordinator's deciding to do. But maybe? Mitch Rodriguez got fired. They brought in William Vlachos, I think is his name. And suddenly their offensive line has given up 1 sack in the last 2 games after giving up 22 in the first 7 games, and they're running the ball effectively.
That seems better.
Yeah, a lot better. And suddenly the offense looks competent. This game was really, really fun. If you had a chance to watch this one, you were in for a good game. Oregon State, Colorado, back and forth the entire way. Colorado was able to move the ball effectively, but so was Oregon State. They ran the ball really, really well. But the thing was, Colorado was finally able to run the ball. Jarek Broussard finally had his breakout game of the season here in game 9. Ran for 151 yards on 24 carries. And Brendan Lewis, not being harassed by pass rushers all game, didn't look great, but he looked competent.
Yeah.
Was 15 of 24 with 3 touchdowns. I mean, he's not throwing it downfield. He's mostly dinking and dunking, but not making huge mistakes. And the end result was that in overtime, Colorado was able to pull ahead and take the lead and win 37-34. But big takeaway is I think Colorado's offense is now in the comfortably like below average to average territory, which it needed to be. And that should make the final, you know, 3 games of the season somewhat interesting for Colorado.
I would think so. This was weird. Oregon State plays poorly on the road. We've seen that, right? But they get away from what's making it work. BJ, you know, Baylor, like, he didn't even have 100 yards in this one. I thought they could have run him more than they did. They came out throwing, you know, and it just seemed like from the very beginning, you're like, okay, this is not going to be a recipe for a victory. And you know, Colorado was legit. Like, when you would rely on Colorado just not being able to score, but they were able to move the ball. Like you said, they could run the ball. They could score. Oregon State was hanging around, though. They had a nice fourth quarter comeback. You know, but Colorado had the real offense. And that was the one thing where, like, this looks like the worst offense in FBS, right? Mm-hmm. Now they look legit. And maybe, I don't know if it's
I don't know if legit. They look like an offense again. They don't look like, you know, a cruel joke played on Colorado fans.
Yeah.
They look below average. They don't look great. Brendan Lewis, I think, is still a problem, and I think the offense generally lacks dynamicism, like in the play calling and everything. But they're not like just absolutely hopeless, which is what it was.
Yeah. So Oregon State goes up late, and then Colorado, like, so here's why I would say legit or just whatever, like competent. They go on a long scoring drive to retake the lead. Like, this wasn't, we had the lead and we just sort of like ran the ball and we're able to like keep Oregon State. Like, this was, they were now down. It was late in the game and they responded with a scoring drive. Like, that's like what legit offenses do. Now, the weird thing at the end of the game, Oregon State missed that field goal with 32 seconds left and then somehow gets a time expiring 60 yarder to send it into overtime. Like, what did you make of that whole sequence at the end? Like, that was all crazy stuff.
I think John Smith went full sicko mode on how he handled that. It was really cool. So they had basically they got the ball back with like 5 seconds to go. And normally in that situation, you're going Hail Mary. But he got them to put, I think it was like one extra tick on. It was going to be like when they got the guy tackled, it was going to be like 4 seconds. And then he got him to put an extra tick on. And he had it timed perfectly to throw a 9 yard out to the sideline to get nine just extra yards.
Yeah.
Enough extra. And you recognize your mile high in Colorado. Let's try a 60 yarder. And it went through. And honestly, it would have been good from probably 70. I thought it was really masterfully handled, getting two opportunities at it, two shots at it. They both had all their timeouts. So that was good coaching to keep them in it and give them a chance in overtime, and then they just couldn't pull it off in overtime.
Yeah, double OT. Colorado scored 66 points in their last 2 weeks. They had 71 points in the previous six.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
How crazy is that?
Well, yeah, and that Arizona game, if you remember, that was almost all like defense and special teams.
Yeah.
Like the last 2 weeks, it's been real offensive production, which they haven't had since week one, and that was against an FCS team.
Yeah.
Like they suddenly look like we can score on some bad defenses.
So that was, I mean, absolutely insane. Congrats to Colorado looking like a real team again. You got this one right. I was really upset with Oregon State. I've picked Oregon State like every week. And yeah. I'm probably going to pick them again this week, which makes me mad. But they're like 50-50 there. I think they're 4-4 against the spread or whatever. But.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's see. Our number 9 team.
USC Trojans.
And they were on the road taking on our number 4 team.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Nailed this one as well. Didn't look like I was going to for a really long time, though. Because ASU was, what, favored by 8.5 when we picked it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
USC was covering the whole way.
And it was a point game going into the fourth quarter. And then it was ASU by 8 for a while. And I was like, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Then it happened.
It did.
It was beautiful.
Made me mad. We were both, this was the late game. We were both 3-1, which, you know, good day. And yeah.
It was beautiful.
USC finished the game 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, interception. So, like, yeah, that's not a, you know.
Well, I was concerned because ASU was grinding that last drive, that last scoring drive. I was like, don't do it, Herm. Don't get it down within the 10 and then like knee it out, you sucker.
So
don't,
beautiful.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Good. And thank God he didn't do it. But I was just like, you sicko, don't do it. Because it was like a 6-minute touchdown scoring drive to ice it. But anyway, USC looked bad. ASU's defense, I thought, came to play in a way that they maybe hadn't the previous couple of weeks. USC is still doing the very stupid thing where they're playing both Slovis and Dart at quarterback. Neither was effective in this game. Like, both of them look bad, and I think part of it is because neither of them can get in a rhythm whatsoever. And also, their passing offense just looks completely out of sync without Drake London. They haven't developed another true number one option. Kyle Ford looked uncomfortable out there, honestly. Like, I think he had a drop or two, and he was just not looking too sharp out there.
Yeah.
I like Gary Bryant, but, you know, they don't have another Drake London type on the roster right now. And then running the ball, they just, you know, I think ASU geared up to stop that and kind of forced them to throw without Drake London. And that was, you know, probably the game plan. ASU on its side just ran the ball. I mean, Rashad White's really, really good, and USC is not a good defense whatsoever, and they probably should have run it even more. They
definitely should have run it more.
They should have just crushed the life out of USC. on the ground. They didn't, but they won by 15 points at home. Who can argue?
Yeah, this for me, I mean, I thought there was poorly coached on both sides. Like, this was
not well coached. Not a well coached game.
Two teams that were reeling and just who was going to reel more. That's why I was like, that's why
ASU has broken Jaden Daniels, though. I will say
he looked awful. He was like 55%, no touchdowns.
They made him so bad.
Two interceptions.
Whatever they've done to him, like, and the picks were bad. Like, they're bad picks. And it's just, what's going on, man?
It's bad. USC's two quarterback system was bad. But I tweeted, like, ASU should, you know, getting Rashard White helped. Like, he was out the week before when ASU lost. Like, getting him back was a big deal. You know, he's the one that doesn't fumble. You know, so that helps. But he just ran the ball hard. I thought ASU should have ran the ball way more. USC couldn't run the ball. Keontae Ingram had a huge game the week before, but that was Arizona. ASU was stacking the box. Before you could, if you did that against USC, they would just throw all over you. I felt like USC needed to just throw the ball, but they had to pick one. I wrote a column afterwards, just crushing this coaching staff. Like, the two quarterback system was not, you know, Steve Spurrier does it, Urban Meyer does it. Like, do you want your interim head coach who's a defensive guy to do it? Like, no. Like, this, you have to be an offensive genius to make it work.
It's not like you're getting, like, two wildly different things. Like, Dart can run, but, like, you're not getting two entirely different experiences with the two quarterbacks. It's one thing if you've got, like, one guy who's, like, your wildcat quarterback and the other one who's, like, essentially the Tim Tebow, Chris Leak system.
Yeah.
But you're not getting that. Like, it's two guys who are mostly pocket passers, but Dart can run a little bit more. Just play Dart.
Yeah. I kind of feel they're going forward, but we'll see. They haven't announced anything yet. Slovis was out this week at practice. We were, you know, like I said, we were out there. But now, you know, now they just basically have a bye week and they're getting ready for UCLA. But I think they're going to, I think they've tried it for 2 weeks and it's just not working. So I think they're going to switch back to one, but who knows? I don't know. I mean, they haven't said they're going to, but that's just what my guess would be. We kind of buried the lead. Fox on the field. Like, that was awesome.
That was very cool.
It was an ESPN game and you got a fox.
Yeah.
I guess the announcers thought it was a cat. Chris Trevino next to me was like, is that a cat? And, you know, we're Arizona State, you're a high up in the press box.
Like, oh, yeah.
You're like a zillion miles up there. So we had to pull out the binoculars and like, no, it's a fox. And I guess some people thought it might be a coyote. Like, no, it's a fox. But the thing, when we were watching it, like, it was going on. I think USC went forward on fourth down, like in the opening drive. And the fox was like on the field. Like, it was behind the play. It was weird. But the fact that it ran up into the stands, went like 20 rows up, and then somehow came back down and eventually went out the tunnel, it was pretty amazing. Like, that was like the highlight of my night.
What a real commentary on the football game.
That was the highlight of my night. I loved it. Okay, so let's see. We have our number 8 team we already talked about. Oh, no. Yeah, we already talked about California Golden Bears. This one we have to... talk about a little bit. I don't even know why we have them this high, but this is our number 7 team.
Washington Huskies.
Everybody's terrible there. They have to have a number, but they
shouldn't
know
be.
Where.
They shouldn't be that high. We screwed up somewhere.
Yeah, okay. And our number 1 team.
Oregon Ducks.
Okay. I'm ready to discuss this in a slightly more measured way. Jimmy Lake should be fired. He should be fired like a gun. He should be like fired into the sun. But like beyond that,
yeah,
Oregon friggin' dominated this game. The fact that it was close is probably a reflection on Mario Cristobal at some level. It shouldn't have been close. Oregon absolutely statistically dominated this game. It was the statistical makeup of a game that they should have won by like 4 touchdowns. The fact that it was even a 1-score game for Jimmy Lake to screw up at the end is an indictment of everyone involved in this hopeless contest. Anthony Brown threw yet again one of the worst picks I've ever seen in this game. It was then followed by Dylan Morris throwing one that was even worse.
He said, hold my beer.
Yeah, quarterback play was awful in this game, but one team could run the ball, and they ran it like... I mean, it was freaky how well they ran the ball. Travis Dye, Anthony Brown, Byron Cardwell combined for 329 yards on 56 carries. If you're only scoring 26 points on that, I don't know what to tell you. Washington, meanwhile, ran for 55 yards. So they had an effective quarterback play and only ran the ball 55 yards. It was really based on essentially a pick early for Washington that they returned to the 6. They were able to score a touchdown on, and then from there they were basically hanging on and chipping in like a safety at one point. And it's just, you know, and the safety, like, I don't know, when you saw it, did you think that was a legitimate safety?
Yeah, the first, there's two safeties in this game, which is great. Yeah, I thought that was, yes, like, kind of questionable.
The actual safety, not the one where the long snapper subconsciously was protesting against his coward head coach.
It was, you know, it is funny. And there's a lot of rain. Okay, a lot of rain in this one. I thought it was a legit safety, but I didn't watch it like a whole bunch of times or whatever. But okay. it was close. But it was like 9-0, I think, or something.
It was 9-3.
With, you know, when we do these games and we pick these ones, and this was when I put a bunch of, you know, I put a bunch of money on more units. Sometimes in the beginning, you're like, oh, that's not going to go well. Like throwing that near pick six and then, you know, giving up a touchdown to Washington early, then getting pinned at your one and giving up a safety early on, I still didn't feel like usually like, oh, this game's not going to go your way. Like if Oregon had to cover like 20 points or something, it'd be like, okay, this is bad. But the spread in this one was still, we had it at under a touchdown. So I felt comfortable pretty much the entire time just watching this game go, even though Oregon was down early. That was very weird. The Washington offense was just absolutely awful. Travis Dye had a career high. He was over 200 yards. Oregon was just like, I don't know. They just looked like they could have done so much more. They left so many points on the table. They had a 3rd and 33 after, like, Oregon was like down there, like in the red zone, I think it was, or just punching on penalties, whatever. Zach, 3rd and 33. And then they punted from the 49-yard line. They punted instead of taking a 49-yard field goal. They could have gone up two scores with 2 minutes left. So I was getting a little worried towards the end. They could have made it a two-score game. Didn't do the 49-yard kick. It wasn't a 60-yard kick. This was a 49-yard field goal, which, you know, more legitimate. And they punted. I don't know what you thought about that one.
Yeah, I don't know what their confidence level is in their kicker. It was because they had like what an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, and then a personal foul.
Yeah, I think
that
there was,
knocked them back 30 yards real quick, and it's just dopey shit happening.
Yeah.
I thought the Forsyth one, that looked like a really bad call to me. Oh, I should mention. I think this was RG3 on this call.
I think so.
Awesome.
You like him?
Oh my God, it was so good. He was like making jokes and stuff. Like there was a masturbation reference at one point.
What?
That he kind of like. So when the guy with the club for the hand caught the interception from Dylan Morris, the one that was the worst throw in history, he caught it and he's like, oh man, he can't even go to the bathroom by himself and he's able to catch that. And he's like, and then there's like this nervous pause, giggle, and then he's like, there's a lot of things he can't do by himself. It was beautiful. No, but he was great because he was calling out the bullshit refereeing the whole time. And at one point, like, Forsyth got unsportsmanlike for, like, basically just being aggressive on the offensive line. And he was making the point, well, basically that's a bullshit call, and Mario Cristobal's not going to be unhappy with that.
No.
You want those guys aggressive.
Yes. Oregon ends up punting instead of kicking the field goal. And then, so Washington's pinned deep. And on fourth down, they decide to punt, like as you mentioned, and that was not very great decision, as you called it. And then a lot of people were tweeting out, that's a bad decision for a school with such academic prowess and stuff like that. A lot of those jokes sort of came out when that time. But then Oregon, at the very end, then they were running on him, right? And they run a late TD in, and it gets called back because his knee was down or whatever. They're at the one. They're trying to punch it in and like don't realize that the clock is running. They didn't get set, and the clock just runs out. So they win by 10 after the safety or whatever. So that was like, they were going to try to like pile it on.
Oh, they should have.
Yeah.
But they
screwed up. Like their bad coaching prevented them from scoring a bad decision touchdown at the end of the game.
Yeah, it was unfortunate because it would have been a good – I wanted that to happen to Jimmy Lake after he made that decision.
Oh, and then Jimmy Lake punched a player. So that's all that happened in this game. Or push the player.
Yeah, this will be Jimmy Lake's last game coaching at Washington, more than likely.
Yeah. Okay, so crazy, 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 and...
crazy.
That was good. But I got that one right, and I, you know, like I said, put a bunch on that. That was good. Okay, no truck stops. They bet on, like, over-under and stuff, and they'll put different things, so I don't know if I should do that.
I don't get into that. No,
I kind of like just like, oh, I really feel good about this game. But I was getting a little worried because Oregon just was letting them hang around a little too much. Okay, so we still have our number six team.
UCLA Bruins.
They were on a bye. We had five Oregon State, four Arizona State. Three, we have...
Washington State Cougars.
Also on a bye. And then number two, Utah. And number one, Oregon. All right. Now we're going to do our week 11 picks against the spread.
Let's do it.
Okay. First up, we've got
Utah Utes
on the road at the hot, the red hot
Arizona Wildcats.
An 11 a.m. or on the Pac-12 network, number 24, Utah, traveling to 1-8, one game winning streak, Arizona Wildcats. Utah is a 24 point road favorite. 24 points.
Yes. That's many points.
That is a lot of points. So I just
Arizona just won.
I'm gonna look. Hang on, I need to look at Arizona's recent history. Okay, they lost. So first of all, Arizona, outside of a really weird game against Colorado, where they actually was weirdly competitive in the first half. Here's what they've done since the fourth week of the season. Actually, go back to have they been non-competitive in a game since San Diego State? Except for Colorado, and Colorado was really competitive. It just got weird in the second half.
Yeah, that Colorado game was...
The only game where they've been non-competitive, like truly non-competitive, was San Diego State.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Like NAU, they were competitive. They shouldn't have been because it's NAU, but it was a competitive game. Oregon was a competitive game. UCLA was a competitive game. Colorado was a competitive first half. Washington was a competitive game. USC was a competitive game, and Cal, they won. I guess what I'm saying is I'm taking Arizona because it's 24 points.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
And I think Utah's playing really well, and I think they're going to win by a lot. 24 points is a lot of points.
I forget who I was listening. I think it might have been the Pac-12, no truck stops, where they were talking about, and I wrote down Arizona, but I feel like this is a Utah team that they're trying to, like, there's a possibility. I think this was, forgive me if it was the wrong podcast. It's a possibility that Utah can make the Rose Bowl if Oregon makes the playoff. That's not, they have to, they before you could take somebody, a different school, like from a different conference. Now you have to take like a Pac-12 team, Big Ten team, and it's the highest ranked in the college football playoff. They're ranked now, and they want to stay that way. So I feel like they were to go out there and put a beat down on people. That was sort of the logic, and that made sense to me. I'm like, you know,
but they could put a beat down on Arizona and still not win by 24 points.
That's true. And it is on the road. I wrote down Arizona, and I'm contemplating changing it. There's nothing – I hate rooting for, like, covering this huge spread. Like, the Oregon game the other week where they won by 23 and they were favored by 24.
Utah's won one game by 24 points this year or more.
Yeah.
And that was last week.
But Arizona's bad.
Arizona's bad. But they also haven't lost a game by 24 points and since the second week of the season.
Could maybe won't get out of the ICU by the time this game comes around, right? Like he's true. I assume he's in the hospital. True. Like he has to be.
Yeah.
For at least a week.
But then we might get Jamaria Joyner.
Ooh. All right, I'm gonna take the points here too. That's just so many points, you know.
It's too many points.
But I feel like Utah's not gonna win by 40.
So. Probably.
Yeah. Okay. This one, I can't wait for this one. It's gonna be a good one.
USC Trojans.
It's a weekender, man. They're going up the Bay Area, taking on
California Golden Bears.
Do your thing.
COVID canceled
or postponed? Yeah. So we don't get that one, but it will be. We got an extra game to for a championship week.
Wonderful.
Yeah, one more game to do that. Okay. Next up,
Stanford Cardinal.
They got to go up to Corvallis, take on
Oregon State Beavers.
At that classic kickoff time at 2:30 p.m. on the Pac-12 network, Stanford traveling to Oregon State. Oregon State's a 12.5-point home favorite. Do we have any word on Tanner McKee for this game?
Crap, I had it as 11 before. It's moving the wrong direction.
Questionable. All right, give me Oregon State.
Yeah, I'm taking Oregon State, too. When I wrote this down originally, it was like 11. But yeah, so and it's probably not going to be Jack West, according to Jackson Moore with a tweet I saw him earlier in the week. It was another guy, some other freshman or something.
Isaiah Sanders?
Maybe. I don't know. Was it him? I don't think it was him. I don't thought it was that name, but yeah, it doesn't look like Tanner's going to play. 12 and a half, whatever.
Ari Patu.
Okay. Ari Patu. Yeah, whoever that is. Maybe he's better. But
give me Oregon State.
Yeah, I'm going to take Oregon State. Oregon State, I picked you every week. But this is home. You fired the defensive coordinator. The defense is going to get way better. Stanford is butt, like we talked about.
They have been upgraded to ass. Stanford is ass.
Is that an upgrade or a downgrade?
Whatever.
Okay. Yeah, we'll both take the Beavs. All right. Fresh off a win, we got
Arizona State Sun Devils.
On the road, taking a team that we have ranked way too high.
Washington Huskies.
4 p.m. on FS1, ASU traveling to Washington. ASU is a 5.5-point favorite. I am not confident in Jaden Daniels, and I'm not confident in ASU's staff, but Washington's ass. So give me ASU on the road by 5.5.
I like ASU as well. Washington is just so bad.
They're really bad. And I don't know if we get, I can't take sight unseen the fact that John Donovan and Jimmy Lake won't be there. Maybe that helps a lot. I have no idea. I think Bob Gregory is the interim, though. So yeah, give me ASU.
The fact that Rashard White's back, I think that helps. Like, I still think ASU was poorly coached. They were bad, and the only reason they were successful last week is USC's terrible.
But their defense is pretty good, and I think it showed up.
Yeah, and so, and the defense should travel. I don't really like it.
I don't love it. I don't love it, but I'm taking ASU.
Yeah. Okay. I just think Washington's that bad. All right, let's go. We got
Colorado Buffalo.
On the road, taking on
UCLA Bruins.
6 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. Colorado traveling to UCLA. Way too many goddamn points. UCLA's favored by 17. Give me Colorado.
That's so many points. I had it at 16 and a half, and now it's 17. Like, I think this is one I'm going to put multiple units on, if that makes sense.
For Colorado?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's a lot of points. Colorado
can score
points now.
And frankly, like, if you've been watching the last 2 weeks, there's not that much separation between these two teams. Like, Colorado's offense is like somewhere in the average range the last couple of weeks, and their defense has been decent at times in the same way that UCLA's has been like decent-ish at times. But I think Colorado's has had bigger peaks than UCLA's defense has had. And UCLA's offense has been scuffling a little bit more of late. So, yeah, no, I think this is going to be much more like a one-score game than a three-score game.
All right. So we'll both go on Colorado. We've agreed on every one. Crap. This is I'll have to pick different from the last one. But next up, this is the game of the week.
Washington State Cougars.
On the road, taking on
Oregon Ducks.
All right, so this one's on at 7:30 on ESPN, Washington State traveling to number 3 Oregon. Oregon is a 2-touchdown favorite, 14 points. So here's what we've seen from Washington State here in the post-Rolo era. They played a competitive game against BYU at home, lost by 2. And then they beat ASU's ass on the road, 34-21. And ASU, I don't know if we were overreacting. They might be pretty good. And Washington went in there and beat the hell out of them.
Washington State did, yeah.
Washington State, sorry. Give me the Cougs.
Yeah. Damn it. So we agreed on every one.
We just guaranteed an 0-5
you know
week,
what?
By the way.
Here, I'm going to switch my Utah one. I'm gonna take Utah.
All right, yeah, you're on cool? the fence. What the hell?
All right,
why not?
I'll go, because otherwise we've agreed.
You got to make some ground up.
I'm just trying to I'm trying to make money now. I don't, like, before it was like, you... Now I just want to make money.
It's suddenly how the priorities change when you're down by 3 games here at this point in the season.
Right. But I'll, yeah, so give me the Utes. I'm going to take Washington State as well. Like, Oregon has not been good at covering big spreads, you know. They just haven't. So that, like, last week, it was a single digits. I had no problem taking Oregon. Washington State's a legit team. Jin Delora, I think, still leads the league in touchdown passes, right? Like,
They've looked so fine that, I mean, Oregon, like, it seems like they're, like, allergic to blowing teams out.
Yeah, Oregon doesn't do that. And Washington State is very good at not being blown out. So.
Right. They even gamely tried to keep Colorado in the football game. So, yeah, I think Washington State being a competent football team, they should be able to play this within 7 or 10 points.
Should I put a unit on the money line for this one?
Ooh.
For Washington State?
Ooh. I wonder, is this the bad vibes game of the week on the no truck stops?
I think she had two. I don't remember. She might have been. She hadn't been right though. The Oregon game, she gave Oregon bad vibes last week, and they looked terrible. But they Washington
the
was
bad
so
vibes
bad.
Were not enough to overcome Jimmy Lake.
Yeah, that's so bad. I don't remember. I think Avery might have put this one down. Anyway, okay. Good stuff. Yeah,
still got to do a bunch of questions.
Crap. Okay. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and answer your questions.
Ryan full on tried to end the show before we even got to 25 questions.
Do we have that many?
No. It's so many, dude.
Okay. Hold on. I want to play this drop because I love it.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God. This is always death.
So good. We got two voicemails. You want me to play one of those to start?
Sure. All right.
We'll play one.
Hey, guys. This is Evan from Tempe. I remember I called in the beginning of the offseason about my my thing about how I don't think Herm is a good coach. Obviously, I still don't think he's a good coach. And I remember Brandon Huffman was saying that he's not a bad recruiter. He was just focusing on other things. That's why his classes were bad. And so when he got the 52nd class in the country, that actually wasn't terrible. And I've heard a lot of takes like that, so I'm not trying to call out your boy Brandon Huffman, but I keep hearing that. But what exactly else is he changing? What is it that he's changing that he can be terrible at recruiting because he's changing other things? And what is it? Because all I see is him cheating and not winning at all and not doing anything better. He's had the 28th class, the 24th class, the 52nd class, and now the 93rd class. He's a legitimately horrible recruiter, and he's doing it while cheating. And then, he's a great guy. Well, I'm a great guy, too, honestly. I didn't get the call to be ASU's head coach. You know, a lot of people think I'm a great guy. I still didn't get the call, so that has nothing to do with anything. I just want to know, what has he done that – what was it that he was supposed to be doing outside of recruiting that made him good? Thank you.
All right. That's a wonderful point, Evan. And I want to make this point very clear because this is the same kind of shit you heard at the beginning of the Chip Kelly era. When you hear that, the head coach, it's a good class for what he's doing because he's focusing on development and all this other shit. You know what it means? It means the head coach doesn't like to recruit, doesn't want to do it. That's what that means. You know what's a commonality among all of the best coaches in college football? They all recruit their asses off 100% of the time, 24/7, no days off, absolutely psycho, just pure psychopath behavior. They are solely focused on recruiting. Nick Saban recruits like a maniac. Dude is 71 years old, has won more national titles than God, and he still recruits like he's a low-level assistant in bumfuck nowhere, because that's just what he does. The best coaches do that. So Herm didn't want to do that because he came from the NFL. That's basically the gist. And clearly all they were focused on was cheating and putting in their new program model.
Yeah.
New development model, new leadership model. What was it?
New leadership model. And then what was the it wasn't an investigation. It was a review.
Yes, of course. Certainly right. Not an investigation. We wouldn't want to call it that.
They're doing a review.
Yeah,
review of your cheating.
You're dead right. Your instincts are all correct, Evan.
The good thing is you only have four more games.
Yeah, and then it'll be over.
And it'll be over. I think it's coaching carousel. Is that?
Yes.
Okay, Casey Graham. Hey, guys. Casey from Tacoma. Given Dickert at Washington State seems to be doing good in the interim and thinking what the future of our program's coach may be given its identity, I was thinking of some fits spiritually in the Pac-12 with forthcoming and possible openings. USC is a program that continually trips over itself in scandal and carelessness. So naturally, Hugh Freeze. Okay. UCLA recently attuned to coaches who blazed with a glorious innovation over a decade ago. So bring on Gary Patterson once Chip is gone. You like that?
No.
He has a statue, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Cal seems stuck in a time loop of mediocrity. So Justin Wilcox again. Arizona wants to change management. In dynamic managerial synergy within coaching and increased energy while actually looking in an NFL retirement home. So Mike Holmgren, I like that. Arizona won't, but consider just sticking with Mr. Potato Head out there or one of those air wiggly guys you see in used car lots. Colorado won't either, but consider just putting up one of those old school technical difficulty signs as they use on TVs from back in the day at all entrances to the stadium. Washington, boring, aging offense that gets progressively worse by the year. With a mandatory body of water, welcome Coach Philip Rivers. And a side note, Karonovich with a Q, I guess.
Because he's a QAnon.
QAnon, Karonovich. Okay.
Right.
Karonovich picked a lawyer with a 2 a.m. TV ad with his tin hat on. You think he was watching Ancient Aliens, X-File reruns, or Ghost Hunters.
He seems like a Ghost Hunters guy to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's like... there's a real aspect that, like, we're really hunting ghosts.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Nice.
All right, this is from Howard. P-12 player who made it unexpectedly big in the NFL, Stanford's undrafted Doug Baldwin became a 2-time Pro Bowler and Super Bowl winner. That's a good example. Oh, I like that.
Thank you, yeah.
I'll read this next one, too, because that one was short. This is from Mike in Santa Clarita. Human sheep coat. Hey, Ryan and Dave. In the most recent podcast, you had a message from a listener asking about the meaning of Drake London's nickname as the human sheep coat. Although this name intrigues me to no end, the announcers in the SC Arizona game were actually referring to Drake London being a human cheat code, as in a reference to a video game cheat code, aka his talent being unreal. I will admit it was fun listening to the two of you try to work out what a sheep coat might represent. Great work. Thank you both for making this historically bad season more tolerable. I'm going to say we probably should have been able to figure that one out.
Yes, very much so. I mean, like, what? Like... First of all, like, we are like Anchorman. We're just reading what's on the prompter. Not always reading it correctly, but we're reading it. And that's what they said. So we're like, yeah. And I, to be fair, I told you I never heard of him being called the human sheep coat. I also haven't been heard him called the human cheat code, but that would make more sense. This is Do It Drunk from Jonathan. Hey, dudes. On last week's podcast, you guys were drinking beer while recording. We still have two beers in the fridge. Can I respectfully request that the next time you crack them open a little earlier so you record the show drunk? I think this would be awesome. I predict Ryan would be all surly and picking fights, while Dave would get all podcast whiskey dick and not even be able to perform. I'm a super fun drunk. I laugh my ass off. I'll say the same thing like over and over again. Very rarely would I be a mean in a drunk thing. I'm a very happy... Everyone loves me when I'm drunk.
Our friend Juan has me read perfectly.
Is that you?
I am. So if I'm just like BSing around, I can maintain for a good long while. But if I'm having to do something functional, no. Like, you could probably even tell. Like, I had one or two beers and I was like slurring on the podcast last week. Like, it's... No. So some people can write when they've been drinking... I cannot. Like, I cannot perform any functional use whatsoever.
Yeah.
Not that that's much different from me sober.
As my brain, as I got older, like, I wouldn't say black. I don't get sick. I can get hammered, and I don't get sick. I don't throw up anymore. But hours of time are erased from my memory. Like, I have to look at my phone to see what pictures are there, or ask friends, or look at receipts. Like, that's very common now. Like, I don't remember stuff. Like,
yeah, that was me in college.
Really?
And my excuse then was it was college, you know, when many people develop low-level alcoholism for a short period of time. But yeah, no, I don't get sick either, but that's part of the problem. You want to be able to get sick because it actually prevents you from, you know, feeling the ill effects the next day as much. And also on the front end, like, some people throw up after just drinking, like before you get to the hangover part. That's also good.
You should.
You want to be able to do that.
I used to do that like in college, but no matter how drunk I get, I've never gotten sick. Really?
Ever.
Oh, I used to, and I don't
mean, except for like the low-level alcohol poisoning from the hangover the next day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun stuff. All right.
Yeah, fun.
And I try to tell myself, don't drink that much. And I still do.
You know what's interesting about drinking?
What?
It impairs your judgment.
So that first beer that it's like,
Yeah.
So maybe do that. Okay. If nothing else, I think it would be worth...
So my whole line on drinking is I don't drink often, but when I do, I drink it all.
I don't do it all, but I mean, yeah, it was good. Hopefully you went home after the show and got drunk too.
No, wouldn't do that.
If nothing else, I think it would be worth trying on the chance it would actually improve the show quality. It can't get any worse, right? Fair. Also, determining if alcohol equals a better podcast would make a great case study and cause versus effect for Washington fans. We need to make sure they are intellectually stimulated. Got to maintain that academic prowess. Look forward to hearing Ryan drunkenly slur Keaton Slovish. Long live Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe, and go Utes. Juan Noel.
Love it. All right, it's from Paul Webfoot. Two-team in-state tournament. Salutations, champions. I have a fun hypothetical, but first, a joke. Did you hear? Tucson is building a new stadium at an undisclosed location. They're keeping it a secret because they're afraid the Wildcats might find out and try to play football there. This was before their big victory.
Yes.
Anyways, looking across the college football hellscape this year, I was wondering if Oregon and Oregon State were one of the better in-state pairs of football teams this year. Alabama and Auburn are probably the best, but I feel like the next tier is more open. The Iowa and Michigan schools would be up there, and you could add in Florida and either Miami or a directional Florida school of your choice, but where would the Pac-12 states rank? I'll list the best two teams from each state in the footprint, and you tell me if you think they would make it to the Elite Eight or better in a 32-entry playoff where both schools play against the two best schools from an opposing state in each round. Feel free to make substitutions if you don't like my school picks for each state. Colorado and Colorado State, nope.
No.
ASU and Northern Arizona, nope. that's funny. Utah and BYU?
Yeah.
Would they both make an Elite Eight?
They're both ranked. Yeah.
Yeah, but think about like the southern states that we're talking about. Alabama and Auburn would be good. Mississippi,
Florida's
State.
Florida's got nothing.
Mississippi, Mississippi State.
Mississippi, that would be legit. Who does Texas, Georgia have? Georgia
Texas
would have like.
And A&M?
Yeah, Georgia.
Or Baylor and A&M.
Yeah, Baylor and A&M. Georgia and Georgia Tech, or I don't even know if Georgia Tech's any good, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter. South Carolina and Clemson? Ugh.
No, they're both bad.
North Carolina and Wake Forest?
Wake Forest just lost. But, yeah, they would be up there. But I think BYU.
BYU and Utah, yeah, definitely. Now that you're going through it, it's obvious. Fresno State, San Diego State. Which is funny, but also true.
It is true. They wouldn't do well, no.
Oregon and Oregon State? I think they might. They might make an Elite Eight.
Yeah, but Oregon State's just been so bad. Like,
they haven't been that bad.
I mean, on the road.
They've been good enough. Yeah. I think they maybe make it. And then Washington State, Eastern Washington, no.
Yeah.
So I think two of these. Sorry, but not sorry for the long email. It's really your fault for agreeing to read whatever we send in. Your one true love, Paul Webfoot.
Thanks, Paul. Why don't we go to our other voicemail?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. I know Dave has already made his thoughts kind of clear on this, kind of in a joking matter, so I guess his question is more so for Ryan. But I was wondering, based on what has happened so far performance-wise, but then also what happened with Jimmy, like, you know, hitting the player against Oregon, I was wondering if you guys really think that the right course of action for Washington is that they should fire Jimmy Lake. You know, it just sounds like there's been mixed reactions. I want to know if you guys think that actually he should be done now, as opposed to waiting. And then also, as of me calling this, Cal Berkeley's basketball team has lost to UC San Diego, who just joined Division I basketball. And so, Dave, I was wondering, what do you think is a harder rebuild right now, Arizona football or Cal basketball? Thanks, guys.
Basketball stuff. Okay, real quick. So, yeah, I think – you know, Jimmy Lake, given the game suspension, he was trying his hardest out there. He's competing. You know, long live Jimmy Lake. He's going to be around for a while. Punt on fourth down when you're down.
I will reach over
there. Okay. Yeah, good. Yeah. He should be fired. I agree with
that. He should be fired immediately. As for the rebuild stuff, it's always harder to rebuild in football than it is in basketball. Basketball, like if you get one good recruiting class, you can be decent. And then if you get two in a row and you actually build the program a little bit, it can turn around pretty quickly. Arizona's going to take a while. Like he needs to really overhaul the talent in the program, needs to make sure that his schemes are the right schemes to fit that. He's a first-year coach. Like, it's going to be a long time before they're even decent again. So, yeah, basketball is always going to be easier. Like, it just always is because of the just number of guys you have to have on the roster. If you cheat a little bit properly, you'll get some guys on the roster. And then, I mean, Cal's not that far removed from having, like, a class that included, like, Jaylen Brown, who's now with the Celtics. Like, you can get some guys at Cal. There's enough of a like interest in Cal basketball that there's money involved that you can, you know, make the right things happen.
Should you like hire your rival coach from, you know, before, like did you ever do that? Is that a good idea or no?
I mean, Cal did it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I know something about basketball.
Look at you.
We had a text message. The Pac-12 refs just gave Arizona a 30-yard penalty because one of their coaches had a toe on the white on the sideline. This allowed Cal out of 3rd and 10 from their own goal line in the fourth quarter of a 3-3 tie. Is this the most Pac-12 moment ever? Can we please pull Jay Shirts out of retirement? What was his name?
That's the glasses ref. Jay Stritchards.
Stritchards. Or is that, no, is that how they said?
I think so.
Out of retirement and get his take on the call. You can tweet him at glasses ref.
This was ridiculous. I can't believe I didn't remember to talk about this. We had a chance at that game finishing 5-3. Arizona had him backed up and almost got a safety. And then they bailed him out completely on a bullshit call down the sideline where like the ref like barely impacted a coach and then threw a flag on Arizona. It's complete horseshit.
So
it was a 15 yarder and then Don Brown yelled at him about him and gave him another 15.
Okay. That's, I wasn't sure why the ref, it looked like he was running and I get it. Like you're running up the sideline.
Yeah, but usually there's a warning first.
Okay.
It happens. Like guys are getting excited on the sideline, but it wasn't like he was on the field. Like he was just in the white. It was bullshit.
It did, but then it became 30 yards.
It kept us from seeing 5-3 as Arizona's first win.
That does make me mad. Yeah.
Here's another text message from Brent, a very depressed Beavers fan. Why can't Beaver fans ever have anything nice? Beavs are now 1-4 on the road. What would make a team play so much worse in the road versus at home? Thoughts on this all being a plan to somewhat make Smith look worse so that he won't get as many offers to leave? Love you guys. I made this point. I think you might have been the last one to email about this, actually. But, like, they're not. Look, so the teams that they've gotten on the road were Purdue, which has turned out to be decent. Then they beat the hell out of USC on the road. And then they played Washington State on the road. Turned out to be decent. Cal on the road, I mean, it's not going to look decent at the end of the year, but Cal was playing pretty well at that time. And then Colorado, which fixed its offense, unfortunately, the previous week. You can thank Oregon for that. I don't know if there's like an overarching narrative. I think they've played, they played Hawaii and Idaho at home and Washington. And then I think the one data point is they beat Utah at home, but they also beat the hell out of USC on the road. It's just like, I think the opponents on the road were generally a little bit tougher than the opponents at home. Yeah. I think that's a big part of it. And then, you know, just the vagaries of Pac-12 scheduling. But I would make, again, the overarching point is that Oregon State, good year. It's going to be a good year. Like, I know this was probably one of the wins that you were counting on to get to 7-5, but Stanford's probably going to be a win. And then I think a fair to decent chance to win one of ASU or at Oregon. So
yeah,
I think it's still a pretty decent chance at 7-5. And I think if you'd been told at the beginning of the year, we're going 7-5, you would have been like, hell yeah, sign me up. So I think you should still kind of feel that way right now.
Yeah. You're not trying to lose games so people don't hire a coach.
Right.
No, not. You're trying to make a bowl.
Right.
The Hithloday, cum plurit fundit, I don't know what that is, says, I think it's very sweet how you boys help each other out when encountering an unfamiliar word, such as last week when David was struggling to describe Kirk Herbstreit's relationship to Lee Corso, aphasia, and Ryan gently suggested caregiver. A touching turnabout.
I love it.
Yeah. I'm curious. What exactly was the, quote, one weird trick that tactically prowess defensive mind Jimmy Lake had when David imagined he would limit Oregon's scoring? Was it a weather machine? Turbo punting? Michael Mothershed?
Mothershed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what I said.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but that was my answer to the question. Michael Mothershed.
Yeah. So if you say something that you think can work against Oregon, Hitler is going to call you on it. Like,
you know what worked against Oregon? taking a bunch of penalties because your coach hasn't taught him any discipline because Hithloday, say it with me now, he's Jim Mora. All right. This is from Chase, Colorado, .. Hey, guys. CU fan here. Having watched the Buffs offense the last two games after watching the first 7 early returns, suggests that former CU offensive line coach Mitch Rodriguez was one of the worst coaches in history. In the two games since his firing, Brendan Lewis has looked anywhere from passable to good as a Pac-12 quarterback. 7 total touchdowns and no interceptions. And the offensive line has looked like a different unit with 1 sack allowed in 2 games and a 222-yard rushing attack against Oregon State. My question is, can one assistant coach really have that much of an impact? Has the Colorado offense gone from the worst offense in college football to a decent one, all because they got one man out of the building? Or is this just a random 2-week blip? Thanks, guys, and keep up the good work. I really think it is because of the assistant coach, and I would not have thought that prior to. I would not have thought that, like, just firing an offensive line coach would have that much of an impact, and it apparently did. Like, don't think that just changes because of a blip. I think that's real.
It's so bizarre. I obviously have something to do with it, but I think it's also about like, hey, here's what's going on. Like, this is changing. We're not going to be the worst offense ever. Could it be like Carl Durrell is like, all right, I'm taking my hands out of this, or I don't know. Or was he involved?
Or maybe he's shoved his hands deep into it.
Maybe it's even more. I don't know. It's the weirdest thing because they were like the worst unit in the Pac-12, if not the country. And now they're very passable. Like, they're better. So
true.
Very strange. All right, this is from Nick. It's a question for me. David, you can answer too. So I guess it's not a question for me.
Wow.
He just lied to me, right?
The subject. He did lie to you.
Ryan, you've said in the past that the Pac-12 would not be relevant unless USC is relevant nationally. David disagrees with you. Let's play out a scenario. Here's the final standings of a Pac-12 season, hypothetically speaking. So you have Washington at 12-0 with wins over Michigan and North Carolina. Well, this is really just like, he just made this up. Oregon 10-2 with wins over Ohio State and Cincinnati. Oregon State is 9-3. Washington State's 9-3. Stanford 6-6. Cal 5-7. The South, Utah's 11-1. Arizona's 10-2. UCLA's 8-4. Colorado's 7-5. ASU's 5-7. And USC's 3-9. Are you telling me the Pac-12 would not be relevant? I guess we can start with that. And he has one last thing. What do you think, David?
This is a question for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously it depends on a lot of things, but the Pac-12 could very well not be very relevant depending on what's going on.
Are you fucking kidding? If they had two teams that were 12-0 and 11-1 at the end of the season, they would be relevant no matter what. If they had four teams with 10 wins or more, they'd be relevant. The point he's making, which is a good one, is that it does not require USC to be good for the Pac-12 to be relevant. And I don't think that's even what you said.
That's not what I said.
What it is it requires, the Pac-12 requires elite teams. The team in the league that's most likely to be elite in any given year is USC. So the shorthand way of saying it is, wow, USC really has to be good because they have the best chance of being consistently good in the league because of the talent base. But that's why. It's not because of like this aura around USC, because right. the league was super relevant when Oregon and Stanford were dueling because they were both elite programs. The Pac-12 just doesn't have an elite program right now because Chris Peterson decided to walk away from Washington. Mario Cristobal is Jim Mora. And USC has frittered around with Clay Helton. UCLA has continued its 22-year journey into mediocrity. ASU hired Herm Edwards, and nobody else has a real chance. You know, it's just there needs to be an elite program. And USC with this next hire has a chance of doing that. Just by hiring the right coach, USC has a chance of doing that. Because it's USC, because USC can recruit at a top five level.
I guess it's hard to look at this and take it seriously, because I get you. Utah 11-1.
Washington 12-0. No. Sorry,
buddy. Oregon 10-2. That's fine.
Arizona 10-2.
Arizona 10-2 and Washington 12-0. Like, it's hard to like, this is like more like fantasy land than what's going on. If that
we are only 5 years removed from Washington truly, yes, going
like the other way.
12-1.
Yeah. Or
2016, baby. They were in the playoff.
0-12? Yeah. How many years is that? Like, that's not that far either.
That was 13.
Okay. So this is sort of like, feels like fantasy land, but whatever. He said, by the way, Dave, on broadcast, you said you weren't sure the last time UCLA and USC head coaching jobs were open the same year. I believe was the year Donahue was hired for the good guys and Robinson was hired for the ketchup and mustard. From Nick.
Cool. So like 1976. All right. This is from John, Pac-12 coaching. Dear Ryan and the other guy, what in the hell has happened to Pac-12 coaching? Back in the 90s, the conference had Dick Tomey at UA, Bruce Snyder at ASU, Terry Donahue at that place in LA, John Robinson at USC, Bill Walsh at Stanford, Mike Bellotti at Oregon, and Don James at UW. Granted, all those coaches weren't always great, but they all had great teams at some point, minus Stanford, who had a legitimate great coach. Jesus, ASU came within 1 minute and 20 seconds of winning a national title. I would take any one of those coaches over any coach currently leading any of these teams. And I'll add the funny line, which is, and some of them are dead, and I would still take them. Does the conference lack commitment, resources, both, or something else? Love the show, but I always feel dumber after each episode after having listened to it. I'll give it 5 stars, but like I said, I'm not very smart anymore.
Thanks, John.
No, I think at this point it's been a lot of bad hires. I think in the future it may be a lack of resources that prevents them from hiring good coaches, but I think right now, at the lowest schools, maybe, like, I think Durrell was sort of a budget hire, but even still, they paid him like $3 million. I think they've just made bad decisions. Like, I think they've had a lot of bad hires made. And I think Washington, it was somewhat justifiable. They went with a continuity hire. ASU, they were trying for that new leadership model. And oh, yeah, Ray Anderson was Herm Edwards' agent. You know, it was like a lot of stupid stuff like that. But I think it's just been, you know, one of the marquee openings in the last 5 years. I realize I'm putting air quotes around marquee, but one of the marquee openings in the Pac-12 in the last 5 years was UCLA. They hired Chip Kelly, and that should have worked.
It should have,
and it did not. Really did.
Four more years, we'll see.
Yeah,
4 more years of it. We'll
but see. Like, Oregon has fended off entreaties for Mario Cristobal. Like, there isn't a reason why the top programs in the league are not the top program or are not among the top programs nationally, aside from bad hires.
The problem is Colorado has Carl Durrell as the head coach.
Yeah, but Colorado isn't – I guess my point is there's reasons in the middle and at the bottom where you can make arguments about resources. But the problem is USC, UCLA, Washington have made bad head coaching decisions.
True.
And Oregon has saddled themselves with somebody who I think is good but not great in Mario Cristobal.
And someone might hire him away. But I'm saying, like, for Colorado – not only did you lose Mel Tucker, who you went on a limb on, right? Like, he was only a coordinator, not only, but he was never head coach. He's 5-7 at your program. Like, you should keep that guy, because who's going to hire him away? Michigan State hires him away and pays him a truckload of money. And, like, what do you do? Now you're stuck with Carl Durrell. Like, if you do make a good hire and people identify it, like, you're gone. Like, you're screwed.
But you can't make that as a blanket statement about the Pac-12. I think that's a statement about Colorado. Like, I think Colorado is resource-strapped, like, specifically that school. And also, I mean, earmuffs, Colorado fans, earmuffs. It's a moribund program. Like, they haven't been good in forever. They had one good year with Mike McIntyre, and other than that, it's been a disaster program for almost 15, 20 years now. So Mel Tucker, like, when you're looking at that, it's like Michigan State's a clear step up from that, because Colorado, yeah, there's no potential there. But here's the thing, if ASU had made the Mel Tucker hire, right? Like, say somehow the timing had worked out where they made the Mel Tucker hire. I don't think he leaves for Michigan State that quickly, because in Tempe, you can actually consistently, and especially with the energy he was going to be putting it into it, you can consistently recruit at a top 20 level if you've got somebody who's that dynamic and really good at recruiting and really focused on it. And I don't think he then leaves as quickly as he did for Michigan State.
Colorado. Would Colorado fans be happy if, like, LSU hires Mel Tucker and steals him away from Michigan State? Like, would they feel, like, justified? Like, ha!
Well, and that would signal to me that Mel Tucker's priority there is not necessarily the money, but the opportunity to win at the highest level.
Yeah. All right. That was a voicemail. I think we're Jay, New York. Is that next? Go Ducks? Question. First, I'm a Utah fan. If my hope is that Utah makes it to the first Rose Bowl game, should I be rooting for Oregon to beat Utah and Salt Lake City in 2 weeks? My logic is, if Oregon continues to only have one loss heading into the Utah-Oregon championship game, then Utah will go to the Rose Bowl no matter the outcome. If Oregon wins, they'd go to the playoff and Utah to the Rose Bowl. If Utah wins the championship game, even better. Then Utah obviously goes to the Rose. If Utah beats Oregon in 2 weeks, however, Oregon would be eliminated from the playoff, and Utah would have to beat them again to go to the Rose Bowl. Beating Oregon twice in 4 weeks seems unrealistic. What do you guys think, Jay in New York? P.S. You're welcome for the paragraphs.
Jay, can I ask you a question? I realize you're not going to provide an answer because this is a podcast. It's a one-way
audio
form. He
can't hear you yet.
Have you watched Oregon this year? And have you watched your own team? Beating Oregon twice in 4 weeks, eminently possible. So Oregon is one of, and Hitler Day earmuffs, I know you're listening to this on like 3x speed, but earmuffs real quick. Oregon's one of the most overrated teams in the country. Like, if you look at their advanced stat profile, they should be like a top 30, top 40 team, not a top whatever, four team.
Three.
Utah can absolutely beat them and probably should be favored if it's at home. Like they're right there with Oregon, and if not, like maybe a little bit better. So, no, I think it's totally realistic to beat them twice, and I don't think you should ever be rooting for a loss when your team is good. So, you know, people got into this when Jim Mora's first year. They had Stanford back-to-back games in 6 days at the end of the year. They had to play them once, and then they had to play them again in the Pac-12 championship game, and it was like, do you throw one and then, you know, kind of, you know, rope-a-dope them or something? And they might have done it. They kind of did, maybe, but... No, I don't think you lose a game for strategic reasons here. It's you only get so many finite opportunities. Or Utah, I think you've got a chance at like having a double digit win season. Go for that. And if the chips fall where they may and you end up in the Rose Bowl, that's awesome. But just have the best season you can. And again, I want to look at the roster for next season, but I think they have a chance to be really good next year too.
Yeah. I would say look at the schedule remaining. Utah's got, you know, at Arizona, Oregon at home, and then Colorado at home. I mean, you have like basically, you don't have to pay attention to the Arizona game or the Colorado game. You can just focus on the Oregon game. I mean, I think Oregon's going to go into Salt Lake City and lose. I think, you know, I don't think you want to, you're going to probably be favored, like you said, in that game. Yeah, I don't think you want to go out and lose that one, Jay. But yes, it would suck if you end up losing in Las Vegas and then don't get to go to the Rose Bowl. But you've won the division twice. You're going to win it a third time. Now it's time to win the conference. So just try to win the conference.
All right, this is from Earl in Torrance. Fire Justin Wilcox. Guys, no, don't fire him for his lousy record, but for failing to have enough players to practice due to COVID-19 infections. I thought they were smart in Berkeley. Haven't they learned how to be safe after 20 months? Now USC must play another terrible game in December. We want the season to end, not go on endlessly. An irate Trojan fan. I love the angle. Yes, absolutely.
There's a legit reason, like, if you're a USC fan, you don't want the season to continue. You just want to move on. Even making a bowl would be questionable. But the players say they want to go. So at least the ones we talk to.
Nobody wants to watch this USC football team play anymore football.
They're not good. Like, they're just not good
at
all.
It's not enjoyable to watch it on any level. Not even on the hate-watching level is it enjoyable.
No, and there's players that are talented, but they're not being utilized. Like, it's just, it needs to end. It needs to, like,
yeah.
You need the old yeller this football season.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Since this is our last one, Sin City Trojan 21, UConn 2024. Hello, Ryan. And whatever U.S. forefather is sitting there, undoubtedly contemplating the bane of his existence in the college football landscape. I think that's you.
That's me.
Let's take a shot at you.
Yeah, it's. Okay. I don't know if it's a shot. But it's,
you don't think?
You know,
okay.
I just think it was an accurate description of the situation.
I have a simple question for you. Considering the fact that Chip is coaching his last few games, don't say that. Leading the great powerhouse that is, quote, Westwood JV football. Imagine if the great Chosen Rosen had stayed one more year to play for him. In year 2024, what team has more wins? I think he spelled this wrong. FUCLA, mm-hmm. Coach Unknown, or UConn with new head coach Jim Mora.
Mm.
Does he go on? I guess we can.
Got to go UCLA there.
I would think. I mean, I think Jim Mora is going to have a hard time winning. If he's still the head coach in 2024.
Hard to see.
Because UConn's gone through coaches pretty quickly.
Yeah, they sure do.
Anyways, this season for the Pac-12 is once again a wasted payoff opportunity. Jux will not make it because it's the Pac-12. And will be another offseason of hearing coaches and athletic directors telling fans how close the league is to being a top playoff contender. At least the thought of more Pac-12 podcasts this summer. Talk about something like which head coach is comparable to Marvel character... to which Marvel character can help bring some form of sanity to a conference that is, quote, 12 teams short of a full six pack. Thanks for your time, Ryan. Hope that other guy hasn't started to look forward to women's softball just yet. Your avid listener, Sin City Trojan 21.
Thank you, Sin City Trojan 21. That was great.
Yeah. I think that's it.
That's it for me. I'm tapped. I am drained of all life force.
It felt like 2 hours. It was only like an hour 40.
I know, but it felt every minute of those minutes.
There was, yeah.
Every single one.
There was a lot of
weighing
minutes
on me because of all I have to do carrying the show.
We didn't even have a beer. But we do appreciate all of you guys listening. And, man, so many reviews. Thank you for all of that and being patient. And, you know, waiting for Thursday to get the show. But good stuff. I hope you guys enjoy your Pac-12 weekend. If you want to be down in Hermosa Beach, come down. Check me out. I'll be south of the pier. hanging out, having some beers, maybe watching some Pac-12 football on my phone. David will be in his man cave somewhere.
That's me.
Complaining about Jimmy Lake punting or whatever he's going to do. But that is David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.